Welcome to Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast program. The guest this week, here to tell us all what we're doing wrong, it's Alex Chapman! And welcome to Series 2, Episode 7 of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast programme, starring me, Ollie Bettesworth, joined by the cacophonous sounds of sunny, gorgeous Mitcham, seeing as the podcast studio room I have in my flat, guys, is far too hot with the window closed to even think. I've been gone a while since the last episode, after repeatedly promising that I would be getting back on track. I don't really have much excuse for that, except that I have been very lazy. In fact, I'm only recording this now because my stupid, ugly girlfriend, who is sat right across from me, has decided that we have to do work today in order to be productive and feel good about ourselves or some shit, rather than doing what I wanted to do, which was to... Yeah, you got a bike! Everyone's fucking impressed! Rather than doing what I wanted to do, which is to stay in bed all day and watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But no, we didn't. Anyway, please do come to my Edinburgh show, guys, between 21st and 30th of August. I'll be up there doing my show Sunshine and Lollipops and A Creeping Sense of Existential Terror. Now that I've got my venue sorted after the fantastic PBH/Freestival land grab scandal, the infamous Cowgate Headgate affair, which was great. I won't go into it now or anything, but do Google it or read up on it on Chortle if you want to find out about something which caused a great deal of discord and mudslinging across the open mic and professional circuits. There was a lot of fun for everybody, but that's now sorted. I've done a few previews and they've been going pretty well. So if you've been enjoying this podcast and you think, I want to see that guy who asks all those really mean-spirited questions of other comedians doing his own comedy, ideally doing a 45-minute show about how depressed he is all the time. That sounds awesome. And could you possibly throw in some oblique references to French existential philosophy in there? Yes, perfect. Well, do come along to my show. If you can't make it to Edinburgh, I'm actually going to be doing a little preview of it at Crown the Knave, at the Mug House near London Bridge, or just under London Bridge, technically, on the 11th of August, right before I go up. So please do come along to that. Anyway, this week I have a tremendous guest in the form of a comedian, Alex Chapman, who came to my attention a good few years ago on the circuit at gigs for being one of very few British comedians, really, who does 100% political, topical material. I think he even had a period, at least, where he was doing new sets like every week and scrapping it because of new things happening in the news, which struck me as very ambitious and something to be admired, really. I can't feel particularly comfortable about the fact that I'm saying nice things about one of my guests so early, so he smells also. How about that? Anyway, we talk primarily about satire and political comedy, and I think he's got some very interesting and insightful things about that, but he is also ugly and I hate him. Please do enjoy the show, guys. I think it's a good one. I'll see you at the end. Goodbye. Alex Chapman.
The very same.
Any relation to Tracy Chapman?
Not that I know of.
You don't do stand-up anymore, do you?
Nope. I haven't gigged regularly for like 2 years or something.
Is it because you couldn't hack it?
Probably, yeah. Just the sheer energy that I brought to the stage every night just drained me. Mm-hmm. Couldn't sustain it. I don't think anyone could, to be honest.
Mm. Did see you up there throwing yourself around, much like the late great Robin Williams in a lot of respects, and I felt like he is going to burn out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
We're joking, of course, because you're about the most monotone, dry, deadpan act. Is this the way that you hope to encourage people to become interested in British politics?
Oh, I just like to make sure that the the message matches the medium.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, this is something that Chris Rock does. Are you taking a Rockian approach to this? Chris Rock, when he's trying out new material, you know how Chris Rock's delivery on stage is usually very emphatic and energetic.
Mm-hmm.
When he's trying out new jokes, he wants to make sure that it's not the delivery that's getting the laughter, so he delivers all the stuff in a very dry way. Is that what you were doing, except that you never really reached the point where you did the big stadium gig in front of lots of people?
Yeah, so I do that bit where I just test it out by being very monotone and quite flat in my emotional responses, but then I never actually remembered to put that in afterwards.
Right.
So I just kind of stayed very, very dead.
Mm.
I guess you would say.
Are you a failure?
In what respect? I mean, that's quite a... I think there's many things I could be a failure in. You have to be more specific.
Are you a failed stand-up comedian?
I'm on a sabbatical right now.
Okay.
I'm halfway to failure. Mm-hmm. I guess if I die without ever coming back, then I would agree.
Okay, so the jury's still very much out on that one.
Yeah.
How long do you think we're going to have to wait for the answer?
Don't know. Depends when this comes out. I might have already started up again. Who knows? Anything's possible.
No, I mean an answer to the question as to whether you're a failure.
Oh.
I'm asking you to predict when you might die.
I like to keep my options open, so I wouldn't want to pin that one down.
No plans for suicide at any point?
Not currently. Depends how this podcast goes.
Okay, so it's not like you've failed at stand up, and that's the one thing you always kind of wanted to do, and now you feel sort of despondent and purposeless. And
I would probably say that if I didn't go back to stand up, I would be then living a life without meaning or purpose, and I would find it very depressing and unfulfilling. So,
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally believe that I ought to do stand-up, that it's the thing I'm best suited for.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of all of the things?
Yeah, it'll sound ridiculously arrogant, I suspect, but it's not. There's no kind of ego behind it. It's more just like this is going to sound ridiculous, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Greek concept of... Yeah, I know, so I apologise in advance. I'm a philosophy student. I did philosophy at university. That's my get out. I don't know if you're familiar the Greek concept of telos, which is something's purpose. So the telos of an acorn is to become an oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a fate or destiny thing. It's just kind of, that's what it's designed.
You can just use the word purpose,
can't you? Yeah.
Rather than exposing yourself as...
to fancy words.
Yeah.
That is, I think, my telos is to do political stand-up. I think it's the thing I'm best suited for, and that it would be a shame if I didn't do it. I think my talents would be wasted if I didn't. In the same way that, if this is again going to sound ridiculous, but it's a good example, if Michael Jordan had not gone into basketball, you would say that was a waste. If he'd done something else,
mm-hmm.
you would say,
or
what
indeed,
a waste.
Or indeed baseball.
Well, yes, as it turned out. You would discover it was a waste of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same thing. If I didn't end up doing political satire in some form or another, that would be a waste.
Okay, so in some form or another, not necessarily stand-up.
Not necessarily. I think there are a lot of reasons why political satire and stand-up aren't the best of bedfellows. There's certain reasons why it doesn't work very well.
Why is that? Because is it because you're not good enough?
Yes, at the moment,
is that what
certainly.
It is?
Partially, I think it's just getting people who... Because you need a certain background understanding of the issues...
Mm.
You need an audience who is politically literate.
Okay, so you're blaming the audience.
Exactly, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which is why when you have a show that is a politically themed night, that's a real boon, and it makes it much easier. You're not kind of fighting an uphill battle anymore, because they know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they've come for it.
Yeah, they're up for it, in a way that most audiences just aren't, unfortunately.
Why is that?
I think there's a...
Is it because you haven't made it funny enough for them?
Absolutely, that is a major problem. Just in general, no, that's true. That's absolutely, I agree. It needs to be funny. You see a lot of stand-ups doing political comedy who seem to think that all you need to do is rant for a bit or lay out
what the problem is, and then
maybe they'll tack a joke on the end, or sometimes even not.
No, just say it in a sarcastic voice. A sarcastic voice, that's right.
Not even that sometimes.
Or a sarcastic voice.
Sometimes they'll just
either
let come
those.
On. And,
or a Socratic voice.
Yes.
Who knows?
These are all words.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know, I've seen stand-ups do that. They outline something that the Tories are going to do, and then the joke is, because there's no hidden agenda there.
It's very upsetting to me to see that. It troubles me a great deal. I don't like it when people are wrong. It really bugs me. I really want to correct them. I can't stand the idea that they're wrong and don't know it. that I need to know. I need them to know that they're wrong.
Are they wrong then?
Yes, they're doing it
wrong.
Is
it objectively
yes.
so? Or are you just from a quite a privileged standpoint and quite an elitist standpoint judging their truth?
No, they're just bad at it. I know that sounds ridiculous. And yeah, sure, in a happy, fluffy, magical world, I would say, you know, everyone's entitled to do it however they want. But when you're doing it that way, you're just doing it wrong.
Are you saying that the world that we're not in at the moment is happy, fluffy and magical?
Not that I've noticed.
Sometimes it's fluffy.
That's true. That's often because mold has covered something.
Did you not see the kittens?
I did.
And a bunny rabbit downstairs.
They were quite lovely. I will grant you that.
And they're fluffy and magical.
I didn't observe any magic.
That's because you're blind to the magic.
Is it because I don't believe?
See, what I'm demonstrating is that you've got blinkers on to the magic in the world. But that's another topic. I'm diverting you slightly. So, yes, in this world, in this world that can't possibly exist,
mm-hmm.
What?
I just feel like if you come on, you need to speak the language of comedy, is how I think of it. If I'm trying to do a political set, it's never my intention to make people laugh.
Is the language of comedy English?
Yes, unequivocally, it is English.
Okay, proceed.
So the way I see it is, if you're trying to do political stand-up on stage, you need to speak the comedy language. You need to couch it in comedy. If you've got a message or a point, you can't just do that and then attach a joke to the end. That's a really bad way to do it. Mm-hmm. You need to, when you're explaining something, you need to explain it in a funny way. It needs to be humorous throughout.
There can't be two parts, the exposition and the joke.
Absolutely not. That's a really bad way to do it, because people switch off. I think it's that whole thing. You need to be talking the same language. It would be like if you switched from French to English and none of your audience speak French.
Yeah, and plus nothing is funny in French, because the language of comedy is English.
Exactly.
Alex Chapman, 2014. So how, though, are you supposed to do your clever political joke when you've got such a dumbfuck audience?
Often I just barrel on regardless, but it's also useful to have political themed nights. Like, for example, having done two shows in Edinburgh, two runs the last 2 years, not this year, with Ben Morgan doing a political themed show. That's been really nice because you've got a crowd who are there exclusively for political comedy. So they come knowing what you're talking about, they come well informed. And they're just generally interested in it.
And they're usually liberal too, so they probably already agree with you, right?
Yes, though a lot of them are also Scottish.
Okay.
I don't know.
That tempers the liberalism slightly.
One would assume. Mm-hmm. One way or the other. I'm not saying. I'll leave that up to the listener to layer their own prejudices.
It's pretty clear what you meant there, I think.
So it's just much nicer doing a political comedy night because people know what you're talking about. It's mm-hmm. something that is much more important that people know what you're talking about, because it is often message based or fact based.
Rather than turning up to ruin everyone's fun at a night where everyone's just trying to enjoy themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So many times.
Do you feel that way? Do you feel a little bit like you're spoiling the party because people have come for escapism and you're trying to teach them stuff about politics?
Fuck those guys. Quite honestly, they need to learn.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever felt political apathy. I'm quite apathetic myself, so I think it would be hypocritical to say that. But, I have no time for apathy in others.
You trust your own apathy, but you don't trust other people's apathy. Or apathy in general.
I don't trust my own apathy or myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think my apathy is a major stumbling block to writing more satire. Because I only can write about things I care about. And the number of things that I care about is quite small. I find it very difficult to get emotionally engaged with political stories. Intellectually, I can see it's a bad thing. But that's not sufficient for me to actually write anything on it. I need that emotional push.
How old are you, Alex?
I am 24 years old.
What gives you the right, at 24, to think that you have anything at all of relevance to say about how the world should run and the state of British satire?
Well, I think it's wrong to judge what I have to say based on exclusively my experience or my age. It's basically, you should hear what I have to say and then judge the truth or falsity of that on its own.
Is it because you've bought yourself an education that you feel that you are now a legitimate voice in this discussion?
No, I think it's just my own inbuilt sense of arrogance and confidence.
Speaking of that, when you said that you were exactly perfectly suited to political, satirical, stand-up comedy, what did you mean? What is it
that makes me think that?
What makes you such a good match?
I think I just have a very analytic mind. I'm very good at spotting the problem in an argument or that sort of thing. So it becomes very easy for me to pick apart what someone is saying or an idea they put forward. I'm very good at spotting that, which I think is a massive help in writing political satire, because a lot of it is deconstructing what someone said or a political concept and saying, well, no, that's stupid for these following reasons.
Why have you stopped doing stand-up of late? Why are there doubts as to whether you'll return?
Just because it's been so long now that coming back becomes increasingly difficult. It's very easy to just slip into that rut and not ever get the energy up to go back into it. I originally stopped because I wanted to have a think about the kind of material I was doing. I'd switched to doing more kind of couple of sentence topical type jokes, and then I realised that they suck ass, and so I needed to kind of go away and think about what I wanted to do.
Well, that's very honest of you.
I don't mean my jokes sucked ass. I meant that type of joke I find tends to suck ass.
Really?
Yes, I have
the
evidence.
1-2 punch.
Well, no, not that. No, sorry. That's very vague. No, a very specific type of joke. And I've brought evidence.
Okay.
Exhibit A.
I was wondering. Okay, it's called The Serious Guide to Joke Writing. And the thing that I enjoy about the... It's written by Sally Holloway. And the thing that I enjoy about the cover is that the words The Serious Guide to are in quite a sort of serious font. Whereas then it says joke writing and quite a joyous red sort of scrawl there. So it's sort of the juxtaposition has been quite aptly demonstrated.
It's kind of got the incongruity that's the basis of many jokes. It's a very
absolutely
clever
it
cover.
Does. The Serious Guide to Bush punchline joke writing.
And then
weren't expecting that. How can you have a serious guide to something so frivolous? Let's enjoy what you've brought.
If anything, actually looking at it, that kind of cover put me off buying it, because how could you have a serious guy to show, right? It's laughable.
So why have you brought this?
Well, I'll tell you why. A lot of people recommended this book to me, saying it was really good to learn how to write jokes and stuff. It's the only book on actually writing comedy I ever bought. I don't even know why.
I think you'll find it's because the true comedians don't learn what they know from a book, my friend.
Learn it on the street.
Learn it on the streets, on the road.
Yeah. But the section that I find interesting is her section on topical jokes. Because obviously, being a political comic, I was very interested to see what she had to say on the matter. And here's what she has to say. A lot of topical jokes are normal jokes masquerading as topical jokes. And then she gives the example of a joke from Have I Got News For You, written about the Queen's tour of Italy. It takes a quote from a newspaper. The Queen spent a long time staring at the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. And the punchline is, she hasn't done that since her wedding night. Right, very funny. She says...
I don't get that joke.
Well, we'll move on.
Was she married in the Sistine Chapel? What?
I think the idea is that the Queen has not had sex since her wedding night, where she spent a lot of time staring at the ceiling.
Of the Sistine Chapel?
Just the ceiling in general. But yeah, actually now looking at it, it is not a very good joke. In that it's kind of ambiguous as to which ceiling. It does imply, doesn't it, that
yeah,
she
it does,
was...
It does, yeah.
It's even worse than I thought. Thank you for bringing this to my attention.
Does the Queen get banged in the Sistine Chapel at some point in history? We don't know.
She could if she wanted. If you've got that kind of power,
what's the point of
it?
Being the Queen?
Hmm.
I would just use my queenly powers to get nookie in all sorts of exotic locations.
You would, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, Siren, you've made your fucking point. You're big and important and you're stopping crime.
It's the comedy police, they've come to that joke.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yes, very impressive. Very impressive, thank you.
So, back to Sally Holloway and her Queen joke. I argue that this is not actually a topical joke about the Queen touring Italy. This is her saying this. It makes no comment about the royal family and has nothing to say about Rome, our foreign policy, or the tour itself. It's a simple play on the words staring at the ceiling. But as long as some joke is made and the setup comes from a current newspaper, the audience laugh, the presenter smiles, and no one's the wiser. This is a fabulous way to write topical jokes for your acts, cartoons, or sketches. Right. Now, the problem I have with that is that it's terrible. To say, it's basically she's saying, here's a really easy way to write political comedy, whereby you don't actually write any political comedy. It has no insight, it's no analysis, it's literally just a pun or play on words.
See, I felt like it was going to go one way. She was going to go, this is a sort of political comedy
that to avoid
is bullshit.
Yeah, that's
whereas this is a joke.
A lot of people do that kind of comedy, and it pisses me off, because they say, oh, I'm doing political comedy. You're not. You're doing just regular comedy. It's just the topics you're using in the joke happen to be about
you're using
politics.
It as a springboard to say something generic.
If you did a whole bunch of jokes about fish, like you're like, oh, I've lost my fish, I don't know, you know, what place it was in, whatever, that kind of thing, I wouldn't say you're a fish based comic.
Is that a
joke? Not really, it was off the top of my head.
Okay.
I apologize. Place is a fish, and it's also a thing where you might place it. Anyway, the point is, I wouldn't then say, oh, you're a fish comic. It's they're not telling me anything about fish in the same way that that joke doesn't tell you anything about politics. But a lot of comics do that.
It does. It tells you something. It tells you that the Queen once had sex in the Sistine Chapel.
I don't think that's political. It's very interesting, no doubt. But not necessarily political. But I think we need a new...
Everything the Queen does is political.
I suppose. For very broad definition.
It's very profound what I just said.
Yes, it was. Let's give him a tiny round of applause.
Well, thank you. It's about time someone applauded me on this fucking show.
Has it really not happened yet?
No.
That's very sad.
I know.
Shame on you, previous attendees to Ollie's podcast.
Well, thanks. It's about time someone shamed my previous guest as well.
Each and every one of you. Even the ones I've not heard.
Excuse me?
Especially those ones.
Which ones have you not heard?
Well, the ones that haven't been released yet, but you've already recorded.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Just make sure that listen to every episode.
You were right to try and shame me for not listening to them, though.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't remember what I was talking about.
Can we just clarify, you have listened to every episode of...
No, not even close. But listeners, from what I've heard, they're very good.
I'm giving you the official wrong answer alarm.
I think we need a new definition between political comedy and politicised comedy. I think political comedy would be things like she has given an example of, where you're just using political terms in your joke, whereas politicised comedy should be comedy that has a message, it's got some analysis in it, some insight, it's actually trying to discuss a topic. I think we need more of that, whereas most comedy seems to be this very uninteresting to me topical, I'm doing air quotes, you can't tell, but topical with air quotes comedy.
There was a moment when I saw the very popular BBC comedy show Russell Howard's Good News listed under satire on the BBC website, and I sort of wrestle with that, because it isn't, I mean, the show, whether you like it or not, it is a show about it's sort of YouTube clips and little bits of newsreaders saying some sort of innuendo, or and there are insights in there, but it's sort of very broad, and usually it's the type of joke that you've outlined, you know, the sort of joke that Russell Howard would do, but the springboard is some sort of clip from the news of something. And I don't know if it really should count as satire, but nonetheless is the sort of show that will get that audience, that kind of young teen / young 20-something student-y kind of audience, interested in politics in a way that maybe they wouldn't have before.
I suppose.
Because
you need that kind of gateway drug to political comedy. So I guess it's the... I'm not saying it should be outlawed. Or am I? Maybe in time. I'm saying people are free to do whatever they want. It's just it doesn't interest me at all, that kind of political comedy. I don't think it's political comedy, really. It's masquerading as political comedy.
So why don't you come in and do it right and
show
everyone
how
it's done? rather than just giving up.
Don't worry.
You know, because, you know, it's all a bit tough and everyone has misunderstood what satire is about.
I'm an intensely
lazy. Why don't you come and show us what satire
is?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm too busy being lazy and apathetic to actually do anything to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But one day I will come back and I will fix everything unilaterally, just instantly. It's going to be incredible. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Okay. So, Alex, ahead of recording this episode, you sent me a list of headings that, I'll be honest, are out of context, alarmingly self-righteous. For example, comedy is best used as a weapon. Alex Chapman, 2014, go.
I don't know if that's self-righteous. That sounds more threatening than anything.
But it sounds a bit like the sort of person who champions Bill Hicks going, all this comedy with no purpose, comedy's meant to change the world and strike a blow for the voiceless.
So, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Bill Hicks, because I really like Bill Hicks. It is probably obvious that anyone would say that as a general comment.
There's a lot of people that don't like him. There's been a bit of a backlash, I've seen.
True.
Amongst comedians, anyway.
But, I mean, it's a fairly standard kind of response of, oh, yeah, I like Bill Hicks. Oh, yeah, Bill Hicks is great.
Yeah, but isn't Bill Hicks one of those people that's also accused of just sort of ranting?
Yes, that's very true. See, the thing is, I don't watch comedy ever, really. It's not something that interests me. I'm a stand-up who doesn't care about stand-up.
What the fuck?
I know, it's very strange.
How dare you?
I apologise, Ollie.
You come into our culture with that attitude.
Yeah, I hate everything that you do.
And you think that even though you're not one of us, we should embrace you. You despise everything that we do, and yet we should accept you. What the fuck?
Well, that's really on you as to whether you're a kind, generous person or not.
Continue.
So I don't watch comedy, really. It's not something that interests me. I don't seek it out. I don't not like it. I don't, like, turn it off if it's on, but I don't watch a lot of comedy. I don't study it. It's not something that is a huge hobby or interest of mine. But one of the few comics that I like is Bill Hicks. And not the reason for that is, he's the first comic I ever listened to. I've got an older brother who's 11 years older than me. So I think when I was like 5 or 6, possibly younger, I was listening with him to stand-up tapes like Bill Hicks shows.
That's inappropriate.
Yeah, but it's also very useful. And I think because of that, it's massively shaped how I view comedy. Because that's the first comedy I ever heard. And, you know, it was back in, 1996, 1995, that kind of thing. There wasn't much other comedy to see. I mean, there was things like, I don't know, Jasper Carrot on TV.
What's wrong with that?
And I really enjoyed Jasper Carrot. But, I mean, there wasn't, like, a huge amount of comedy. So those few things you do see...
Just Carrot and Hicks.
Really, really shape how you view comedy. So having seen Bill Hicks, that's kind of, I thought, well, that's what stand-up comedy is. You know, it's like a 5-year-old, you're like, well, that's what it is. I understand now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's heavily shaped how I view stand-up. So I think, it is something, it's always been in my mind that it's something where it's got a very strong message or an agenda. It's trying to do something and it's very political and sort of heavy stuff. But yeah, you're right, Bill Hicks isn't very funny. I would agree with that. Which is why when you see people trying to do that, this folds back into people doing political comedy wrong. They've clearly seen Bill Hicks, seen that he's someone who comes on stage and just rants about an idea for a bit. And you can't do that. I mean, if you try and do that, it's not funny. He's not funny for a lot of the time. He gets away with it because people are interested in what he has to say and because they like him. He does do funny stuff, but there's also huge sections, if I'm listening to it, where there's no funny bits. It's basically just him ranting, and that's fine. I mean, I enjoy it, but it's not funny. And so that's something that people really need to think about and avoid when they're trying to do political comedy, just thinking, oh, well, Bill Hicks did that, Bill Hicks is popular, therefore I should just do that. It doesn't work. It's not funny.
Also, it's not very British.
Yes.
So when you see a British comic adopting that sort of hard-bitten road comic, world-weary sort of thing, it can come off as quite pretentious.
Well, yeah, so I wanted to do stand-up on and off since I was really young. And it's an idea that I kept coming back to and thinking, oh, I'd really like to do that. But I thought I couldn't do it because having seen people like Bill Hicks, that was the kind of comedy I wanted to do. I thought, I can't do that. I'm not passionate and angry like that.
Hmm.
I can't do that on stage. I can't be like rah, rah, rah.
And also, our politics don't really matter.
Yeah, there's that as well.
Whereas American politics do to everyone.
Yes, they're
all
a lot
the time.
More,
terrifyingly.
Yes, they're a lot more exciting, their politics. But I always thought it's something I couldn't do. It was when I saw, this is going to sound stupid as well, like the only two comics I find that I've actually watched or like sought out are Bill Hicks and Stuart Lee, which make me a terrible person.
Absolutely.
But seeing Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle when that was on TV, I was like, oh hey, here's someone who's doing it really reserved, and it's kind of something I could do that. Not in a kind of the way he's doing it structurally and all that. I would say, oh, I can do that. I just mean that's the kind of relaxed, monotone kind of, I don't need to be on there shouting and screaming. Finally, okay, I can do that. So that's basically one of the things that started me then actually doing stand-up comedy when I originally started doing it, was that realization that actually, hey, I can do it. Political stuff, but quite reserved. But then that's on me for not watching a lot of stand-up. I think if I'd watched more, I'd have realised much earlier on that there's a much greater breadth of style and stuff that you can do.
Andy Zaltzman.
You see, here's the thing, because I don't watch much comedy. So, like, I was asking Ben Morgan, who's the guy I did Edinburgh shows with, who's another political comic, can you give me some examples of political comedy stuff to watch or listen to, podcasts and that kind of thing? And he sent me a whole bunch of things. And I kind of listen to a few of them, but again, they don't really do anything for me. I find a lot of them, Have I Got News Views is a really good example. It's something where when I was younger, I really enjoyed it, but then a few years ago, I saw it on TV again. I was massively disappointed because it seems like they're doing that kind of very topical, with air quotes, soft stuff. It's political satire at the moment is more throwing whimsical nerf balls when it should be throwing rocks.
Right.
I want my political comedy to be like intellectual ultra-violence. I want it to be a blood sport. I want people to like walk away in tears because they've been savaged. That's what I want from my political satire. That doesn't really exist. Yes. Not that I've seen. It's entirely possible that I've excluded someone, that someone I'm not aware of, because I don't try to actively seek things out in that same way.
Incognito.
Don't know who that is.
Yeah, you see?
I mean, yeah, there will be people, absolutely. But there's not many of them that I've noticed. The by and large, political comedy is a niche anyway, but within that niche, it's an even smaller niche, I suppose, who are doing that much more angry, aggressive style. That's what I want to see. Something where it's really like, I'm not going to let you get away with what you're doing.
I didn't see much aggression, though, in your act.
It's not overt, it's more kind of, it depends on the set. Certain ones, there's more just a kind of cold contempt,
right,
and condescension throughout it, that kind of like, you're a fucking idiot for doing this. But it can be in there. For some of them, it's, I think, clearer that there's a lot of, I don't know what the word is, fury, I guess, or something.
What makes you furious, Alex?
I don't even know.
What was the last set that you did about something that had made you furious?
Gay marriage was one that made me pretty angry.
You were like, these goddamn gays are gonna be
exactly what I thought.
Like us, what, getting married in a church?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Oh, I remember seeing you do a set actually, and you actually sort of vomited on stage. Was that one?
That was another one about
civil rights.
Yeah, in general.
Right.
How I hate the fact that. That people who aren't like me pretend that they are. That makes me very furious.
What about gay marriage did make you angry? Whimsical tangent aside.
There's nothing more whimsical than pretending.
Stretching the definition of whimsy quite far there.
It's a very cut and dry moral issue, is what it was. It was kind of a group of people saying, no, this other group of people aren't human.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what it boiled down to. It was saying, you are not worthy of the same rights afforded to everyone, so you're subhuman. That's at its basic level, that's what it was. It wasn't, if you're saying that you can't have this thing, you're saying you're not the same as we are. You're saying you're not entitled to the basic human rights that are afforded to the rest of us, therefore you're not a human in the same way that we are, which is abominable. Don't you smirk at my ridiculous word usage. It made me very, very angry, like properly furious.
Mm. Do you imagine, though, going on stage and ranting about people who are against gay marriage, that there'll be anyone at all in the audience who isn't already on your side?
Maybe one or two, but it's never about that for me. I saw something ages ago, I can't remember who said it or where it's from, but it was that there are two types of comics. One type is the person who does it to make people laugh. Well, no, to make people like them and to make people laugh. And the other one is to be mean.
Mm.
I'm very definitely in the to be mean category. For right. me, it's entirely about... It's not to change minds. A lot of political comics, I think, are activists in that they've clearly got... And they're quite happy and jolly and friendly, and they're like, oh, this is the way things ought to be.
Mm.
This is a better... They're kind of painting a vision of a better world and saying, this is what we should aspire to.
Chris Coltrane.
Yes. Yeah, he's there. I read his flyer last year. That's as close as I've got to having an informed opinion, but I'm going to give one anyway. I read his flyer. It was very whimsical and jolly and happy and friendly. And I was like, this is not for me.
Right.
Because it seemed... It's too...
But he's actually going to get closer to making some sort of positive change.
Yeah.
Really.
Probably, but as I said, that's
he probably already has actually. I mean, I don't know much about it, but he's done some pretty.
I would imagine so.
Fantastic
yes.
stuff.
He's done. It seems some quite impressive.
What have you
things.
Done recently?
Recently, nothing. I don't know why I added recently. Ever, nothing. but no. But my point is, I'm not about trying to change things per se, and I'm not trying to say here is how things ought to be. Mine is more just. I'm going to fucking cut you. For what you've done, in a kind of, you've done this bad thing. I'm going to show people that you've done it. I won't let you get away with that.
I feel
someone
like
has to say
the way that
something.
You phrased that has made you seem a bit more dangerous and macho. And you're not going to cut them. I mean,
do you mean
you're going to do a set in front of three people at the Comedy Bin?
It's the intent behind the words, not what the actual effect is. Because obviously, they're never going to know. They don't. They're never going to care that I've done it. Though I would like them to one day. Mm. It's my hope. That politicians would go to sleep imagining my horrific death in a kind of I hate that guy. That is what I aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it when people are wrong. That really bothers me. I need to correct them and I need them to know that they are wrong.
Mm.
That ties back into the gay marriage thing. They thought they were right and that they were really smug in how like they knew that they were right. That
the
church.
Oh, the church.
It really gets to me. I cannot stand that. That's what it's all about.
But they are right, the church, aren't they? On their own terms.
No.
No?
I don't care about their terms. It's ridiculous.
How long have you had this act of disdain for religious people?
I don't have a disdain for them because it's not something they can control.
Pity?
No, not even that. I'm apathetic towards them. Don't care. I don't like religion, but I have no problem with someone being religious.
I see.
In fact, my religion thing is actually like actively, not active, because that implies I'm doing things. It's apathetically anti-religion in a kind of, I think religion is objectively a bad thing, is objectively immoral, regardless of what its tenets are, for a very simple reason, which is that the basis of all morality is a respect for the truth. Religion has no respect for the truth because it believes that it already has it. So no matter how good its intentions are, it's always cut loose from the truth. And you can see very easily how that could cause problems. Like, for example, a Jehovah's Witness who won't accept a blood transfusion for their dying child. That's an instance where their truth has got in the way of helping someone. And the actual truth of the matter.
What about Christian aid?
Okay, that's not really a religion thing. That's more like they're giving aid. That's great. But I'm saying religion...
Because of Jesus.
But then they're not really giving aid because of Jesus.
You're saying that there would just be an organisation called Aid?
Yeah.
Without Jesus?
Absolutely. And I'm not saying Jesus didn't exist. There was a historical Jesus. He was written about by Josephus, the Jewish historian of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Who neglected to mention his magic powers. Strangely.
When you write,
yes.
Comedy is best used as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that people that don't use their comedy as a weapon are somehow spoiling the potential of the medium in which they're working, someone who goes on and silly and brings joy and entertainment.
Not at all.
Kind of a good high gag rate, bam, bam, bam.
I don't know if I would use
escapism the
phrase best used as a weapon. If I was like really trying to say exactly what I meant, probably I would. I think it is best used as a weapon. I think it's something that it's incredibly good at because it's.
So you walk into a room and you see a whole bunch of people just laughing at some puns and
some
wacky voice
and disgust,
and sort of loving it. And for an hour and a half, they escape themselves and all their problems and transcend into this world of mirth and joy and happiness.
Crying.
And you go, oh, what a shame!
What a waste!
What a waste!
What a waste of
boo!
Of comedy
at the back.
Yeah.
Rubbish!
You're using up the abstract concept of comedy. There's only so much of it to go around, and they've wasted it on trivial fun.
Comedy's not meant to be fun.
No, it's not. It's meant to be a lecture.
It's meant to change minds.
No, it's not even that.
No, it's meant to tell people who are wrong that
they're
wrong.
That is,
and
that
stupid.
That is the only thing that my comedy is about. It's about telling people who are wrong that they are wrong. I need them to know that.
I'm trying to get to the heart of what it is that has given you this sense of entitlement over people's opinions.
What, their moral opinions?
Yeah, why is it that you are the guy that has to be the one to tell these people in positions of power and authority that know stuff and have got to where they are through hard study
and
networking, and they're on the front line, they do it all day, they've got to where they are for a reason because the public voted them in, and you think that you're the one that needs to come forward and go, nah, stupid rubbish.
It doesn't have to be me, it can be anyone.
Is it some sort of class privilege?
Sure, we'll go with that. I don't even know what class I am.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's go into that. Clearly you're middle class, Alex Chapman.
Why do you say that?
Because of your voice.
See, that's the thing. It does make it seem that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I don't think I technically am.
Okay.
I'm quite
Why
poor.
Not? Are you?
Yeah. What like happened? I went to university on a bursary and stuff, so I don't think I technically count as middle class. I mean, my parents aren't professionals.
Didn't work hard enough.
No. Lazy. Lazy, hateful people.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I don't think technically I'm middle class, no matter how ridiculous and prissy my voice might sound. That's to lull people to a false insecurity. So that,
Whereas actually you're dyed-in-the-wall working class.
But also I'm not at all working class in any way. I don't know, I'm some kind of terrifying freak cut loose amongst the classes.
Of course, I mean, that much is obvious.
I mean, you can't see this at home, but Ollie can
These
listen.
Fucking sirens! Please continue.
I was just going to say I'm some kind of abomination to the eye.
I think you think that your profile picture at the moment on Facebook is just sort of you looking quite pleasant and giving a nice smile.
Is that
Whereas actually you're looking witheringly at the camera?
That's just my standard face. To be honest, I'm to the point where I think one of my eyebrows is permanently slightly higher than the other from the amount of wry looks I've given over the years.
Did the wind change at some point?
Probably.
The law of averages states that when the wind changed, you were giving one of those wry looks.
I'll try and settle my face into a completely relaxed state and you can see what my default expression is.
Yeah, I feel like you're looking deep into my soul.
A lot of people say that.
And you find nothing at all of value in there at all.
A lot of people
whatsoever.
Do keep saying, I keep feeling like you're judging me when you look at me. I'm like, I don't think I am. I mean, maybe a little, I guess. But unintentionally, I assure you. I think it's just naturally the way I look, unfortunately, for others who must accept my withering gaze, as you put it.
Do you think you're cleverer than most people?
Oh, undoubtedly.
No, answer the question without a sort of ironic kind of...
That wasn't actually ironic. That was...
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Do you mean the word choice or the answer was ironic? I don't know. Maybe, I guess. I would assume so.
Why?
I just feel like I am.
What's given you this impression?
Interacting with normal human beings.
Really?
Normal was a very interesting choice of words there, wasn't it? I don't know. I guess I am. I don't know what evidence I'd use to back that up. Just
if you had to guess your IQ.
I have no idea. I wouldn't want to guess either. But no, because I'm not saying I'm some kind of like magical super genius. And when you say compared to most people, well, yeah, I guess.
But not because you think the average person's quite stupid.
I think by definition, the average person would be quite stupid because they'd be average.
Mm-hmm.
But
an average is quite stupid.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Compared to you, at least.
Yes, I would say that probably
you're getting very uncomfortable.
Because it's difficult to it's a really dickish thing to say.
Exactly why I asked.
But yeah, I think so.
Mm.
I'm sorry. That doesn't mean that maybe the people listening may all to a man and woman be much smarter than I am. But I think as a general rule, I will say that yes, I reckon I'm fairly smart as humans go.
Oh, thank you for sparing me some of your time.
No problem.
Chapman, you've written down on Facebook Messenger here, I see, comedy is not a societal release valve. Unpack that sentence for me, please.
Well, there seems to be this view that comedy that's, I don't know, racist or sexist or any of the ists and isms of your choice has a value as a way of kind of being a safe place for people to release those views and opinions as an audience member, and that's a really good way of sort of lancing the boil, if you will, of getting all that out.
Who says this about racist comedy?
Howard Jacobson. Is it Jacobson? Jacobson?
I don't know.
He's a famous author.
Okay.
He says this.
Clearly not that famous, because otherwise Super Mr. Informed guy, Super Mr. Informed, that's right.
That's true.
Would
know him.
Know him.
Probably have a tattoo.
Yeah.
So he has a book. Oh, I can't remember what it's called now. It's quite old.
It's so famous that you can't even remember his books.
Yeah. It's this oldish book. And he talks about a Bernard Manning comedy show he went to,
mm-hmm.
where Manning's doing all these racist jokes and there's loads of like police officers and stuff there. So in fact, it was like a policeman's ball or whatever, and they're all kind of chuckling away going, ha ha ha, this racist comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying this is really good because it means that people can release what are genuine problems in a safe, controlled way and then go back to their daily lives and it's all good.
Okay, you disagree.
I think that's bullshit.
Okay.
Because, so he gives an example. He compares it to, in ancient Rome, there was something called Saturnalia, where everything.
We're back to ancient Rome.
We were in ancient Greece before.
Same thing.
Very different. Mm. Different time spans as well. Anyway, there's this thing called Saturnalia where the slaves would be waited upon by their masters. That became the Feast of Fools in medieval Europe. And Saturnalia was reused under the same name in pre-Civil War United States. In the South, they would have Saturnalia where the slaves would be given a day off from work to get pissed. And the idea was, you give them that day, and they don't rebel then, because they've had that day of release and stuff. It lets out the steam, so you never have to worry about an uprising. And he compares it to that, but he doesn't seem to realise that by doing that, he's saying it's this deeply cynical way to kind of oppress and control people.
Mm.
He's basically saying, here's a great way to release this horrible stuff in a safe way, but we'll never address the fact that this horrible stuff is there to begin with.
Right.
He's treating a symptom, never a cause. He's saying comedy should be used as this kind of sluice gate for sewage so that it doesn't affect anyone in the real world. As opposed to saying, well, maybe we should look at why we have these issues to begin with. Why do we have these feelings? Maybe comedy should make people think about why they think certain things. But he doesn't say that. He's basically just like, well, racism is a thing, I guess. How can we keep racism but not have it blow up in our faces? It's ridiculous. Comedy shouldn't. That's a really kind of sad, pathetic way for comedy to be, that it's used like that.
So you think that Bernard Manning should have gone to the policeman's ball and been actively confronting the racism inherent within the legal system?
No, because the police would probably have shot him, wouldn't they?
I don't know. It's a bit extreme.
I probably wouldn't expect Bernard Manning to do that. He's a busy man.
Not anymore.
He's got a lot on his plate because he's fat. It's funny because he's dead and can't fight back.
You should write for Have I Got Any Sweet?
I really should. That would be fun.
That Nick Griffin, he's a wrong'un, and he's got a weird eye.
See, that's another thing. It's that joke about they'll do stuff like that where they're not actually addressing... It's red meat comedy, where they're not actually addressing an issue or anything. It's tribal. They're going, here's a guy. It's like the 2 minutes hate, or 3 minutes hate in 1984. It's like, here's a picture of Nick Griffin. What a funny eye he's got. Don't actually, you know, engage with anything. Just... I did a joke that was one of my most popular jokes on Twitter. So, you better believe that got like 4 or 5 likes. It was a joke that was
They're
kind of like...
called likes on Twitter.
I know, I'm sorry.
Jesus.
I realised as I said it.
Favourites. Retweets?
I don't think it also did well live.
Oh, okay.
When I go out into the real world and do political comedy. But the joke was something like... George Osborne has been accused of being very posh. He was so shocked, he almost dropped his monocle in his claret.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and everyone's like, very funny, very funny. But it's a really... I hated that joke after a while, because it's a really shit joke in that it's a red meat kind of joke. It's basically saying, you don't like George Osborne, and he's posh. Let's laugh at George Osborne.
Mm-hmm.
There's no kind of analysis as to why we should laugh. It's pointless. As a joke, I find it completely pointless.
Mm-hmm.
There's no... message there. There's no information being imparted. Mm-hmm. I'd want my comedy to actually tell someone something. In the perfect world, it would also inform them. But then that's something I wouldn't expect to do yet. It's like down the line, my ideal comedy would be something that informed and was insightful. It wasn't just kind of regurgitating someone else's analysis. But obviously that's something that requires a lot of effort.
And as we've established, you're very lazy.
Yeah, I'll get around to it one day.
Mm-hmm. So back to Bernard Manning.
Hmm. What about him?
I don't know. We went off on a tangent about Have I Got News For You. We were talking about... What were we talking about?
That whole societal release valve thing. Mm. Yeah, basically, his point seems to be that comedy should be used for that, and that racist jokes have their place as being a safe way to be racist, so that people don't actually go around being racist in real life or something.
Mm.
But that sounds like such a pathetic, weaselly way to go about things, as opposed to saying, hey guys, we've got a serious problem with racism, maybe we should, you know, try and do something about that. I don't understand why he thinks that's an acceptable thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
That we should just use comedy to be racist in a safe way.
So, but the thing is that those people going to that gig are not going to have their minds changed by a comedian, are they?
Maybe not. Maybe some of them will. I mean, it's
so you're
it's
saying
they
don't deserve to be entertained while they're wrong.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I'm not going to say, well, these Ku Klux Klansmen are here and all they want to hear is jokes about lynching black people. Mm. I wouldn't want to deny them their right to entertainment, so I better go on and do jokes about lynching black people. Mm. I mean, yeah, obviously I would deny them.
Well, you wouldn't be booked for that gig.
No, understandably, I suppose.
Mm.
But...
You'll get Jim Davidson then.
To address your point of never changing any minds, it seems to be one of those well-known truths that political comedy never changes any minds, never achieves anything, satire's never changed anything. But it's not true. I mean, yeah, by and large it's not, and I wouldn't expect anything I do to ever have any impact. But there are very well-known instances, well-documented instances, where satire has had an effect. Like, there's a comic called, in a comic strip in America called Doonesbury.
Right.
And they managed to change some law in America because they were satirising what was going on so effectively in their comic strip. Mm-hmm. To the point where the law was called the Doonesbury Law, in reference to the fact that this had an effect. And there's also Jon Stewart on The Daily Show managed to get a lot of attention placed on Republicans in the Senate or the House, I forget, possibly both, withholding the aid money to first responders on 9/11. So there are examples. It's just, yeah, it's something that's seen as not happening. But it does happen from time to time. I don't think it should be your expectation. My intention only is, as I've said, to say horrible things.
Mm.
I mean, the Bernard Manning thing raises an interesting point about right-wing comedy, which is that there's often people say, oh, there's no such thing as right-wing comedy. There aren't any obvious right-wing comedians you can point to. And there probably are, to be honest. I don't watch enough comedy to be able to, off the top of my head, remember who they are, or just to, in general, be aware of them. But that's not the be-all and end-all of it, because right-wing comedy does exist in the circuit right now, because things like chav baiting material is very right-wing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of material is right-wing, even if the comic themselves wouldn't think of themselves that way. It's pervasive, it gets out there.
Mm.
I mean, you could say a lot of kind of racist or sexist material is right-wing. Not to say that right-wing ideology is racist or sexist, but those are things that are very commonly associated with. And right-wingism, as it is now, that's a big part of it, that there are elements of racism and sexism. So there is right-wing comedy out there, even if there aren't sort of iconic right-wing comics. I mean, this was pointed out to me by a friend of mine, actually. He was talking about the chav baiting thing, saying that actually that's right-wing comedy right there. When people say there's no right-wing comedy, that is a way of it sort of skimming under the radar and never being noticed.
Yeah.
It's actually there in plain sight.
There's an interesting thing with a lot of the sort of obvious right-wing comics, at least in this country, is that they have acquired a sort of martyred state.
Mm.
Someone like Jim Davidson, especially, I've seen, apparently his Edinburgh show that he's just done is this some kind of revelation in that, you know, even Chortle had to give it 3 stars. Apparently, you know, it's pretty good. And I follow him on Twitter, and I've seen a lot of the stuff he's retweeted from fans, and there always seems to be some sort of sentiment of like, don't let them get you down, and you keep saying your stuff, and oh, you can't even say that anymore. And what the fact that we do have a comedy climate that's very much middle class and left wing means that all the sort of alternative voices, or all the voices that are seen to be like the almost Hicksian kind of standing up against the hegemony kind of thing, are all these right wing guys.
That's an interesting point, because I forget where I saw this now, but they were saying that if Bill Hicks were alive today, he'd probably be like a right-wing libertarian comic.
Mm.
And if you listen back to his stuff, you can see there is definitely kernels of that in what he's doing at the moment, because he is very kind of conspiracy theory focused, and he is quite libertarian. So it's not beyond the pale to imagine he would become that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so,
and some of the stuff about that, how he characterises the poor churning out
babies. Yeah, that bit especially.
There's
very...
all sorts of... Yeah, that's quite chav baiting in and of itself.
Mm.
The white trash.
Maybe it's a good thing he's dead.
Yeah, I think that's the conclusion we can reach at the end of this
it's
podcast.
It's good that Bill Hicks is dead.
Mm.
I wouldn't have wanted to see what he might have become.
Mm.
That's another thing. People always posting, where's... I wish Bill Hicks were here to talk about this.
Mm.
Grow a pair, do it yourself. Don't be like, I wish Bill Hicks was here to save me. Write about it your fucking self. If you're constantly waiting for someone else to come along and do it, it's never going to happen.
Whereas they should be saying, I can't wait until Alex Chapman
comes. Well, yeah, can
along
I just say
this?
Can no one come along and do it before I get back? Because at the moment, as far as I can tell, no one is doing it. There's a nice
gap. You're
saying
you're
the
new Bill Hicks?
No, because I'm not from Texas.
I say,
and
see.
I'm not passionate and angry. And hopefully I would have more jokes than he does. But yeah, just if I'm now talking directly into the mic, I'm looking. I even did the little like finger thing to the eyes, that kind of I'm watching you.
It's very intense.
So don't become a political satirist. Don't do it. Wait for me to get back. And then if I need a writing partner, apply or something. But until then, don't do it. Wait for Bill Hicks to magically come back to life.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Because political satire is yours.
It's mine. Stay the hell away from it.
Mm.
You're doing it wrong anyway.
Stay the fuck away from it, even.
I don't like to use that kind of language. Yeah. But yeah, stay the fuck away from my political satire.
Cunt.
You're doing it wrong, you bunch of cunts.
Alex, the last of your lofty and, to be fair, fairly pretentious topic suggestions is all comedy is political.
Yes, it's mostly just to fill space, kill time. But yeah, I think all comedy is political, but in such a broad way that becomes almost meaningless.
Right.
In that, any time you choose what you're talking about and what you're not talking about, that's a political decision. You're giving air to certain topics mm-hmm. and withholding it from others.
Mm-hmm.
That's the general gist.
Okay, here's an example. So this is a political joke.
In theory, yes.
Well, it's comedy, so it must...
Yep.
The man who invented the door knocker got a Nobel Prize. Now, to your mind, that's a political joke because he hasn't mentioned anything about the conflict in Gaza.
Possibly, but I mean, if you wanted to, you could say it's a political joke because they've made the decision, and this would be true in probably most jokes, that the default person the joke's about is a man. That's a political decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would say that's...
You're saying that it could have been a woman who invented the door knocker?
Yeah.
We simply do not have the historical evidence either way.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing they've not actually sat down and found out who invented the door knocker.
I think we can assume it was a man, can't we?
I'd say the balance of probability is that it was.
Yeah.
But he could have chosen to do a different joke. I said, see what I just did? I said he could have chosen to do a different joke. You see? You see, even it's even in me.
It's the patriarchy.
I just assumed there was a guy who had written the joke. I apologise.
It doesn't have a name, but it is rated 4 stars out of 5 on this website.
That seems generous.
Hmm. There was a sign on the lawn at a drug rehab centre that said, "Keep off the grass."
Well, I mean, I felt that as soon as you got to a drug rehab centre, it was going to be clear that there's probably a political element in that.
It's a pun, really, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's still a political... You're deciding what you're joking about. You're deciding what's worthy of attention, which...
That was submitted by Dave H.
Fucking Dave.
From California. A new type of broom came out. It is sweeping the nation. Political?
No, I guess. I mean, it's more of a whole set thing. On an individual joke-by-joke basis,
it falls apart.
Harder.
Yeah, falls apart in this theory.
Not completely.
Mm.
But, yeah, obviously it's become more tenuous. But, I mean, if you think about the vast majority of comics, the kind of things, the kind of topics they talk about, what things they think are worthy of discussion. That's a political decision.
There was once a cross-eyed teacher who couldn't control his pupils.
I guess that's political. It's kind of
in what way?
Dissing the less abled.
Need an ark to save 2 of every animal? I know a guy.
I got it.
It's just that you didn't laugh, so I assumed that you didn't understand.
It was just so funny that my entire body briefly shut down.
So that is religious satire, is it?
No. In fact, yeah, by the current definition, that is sizzling hot religious satire right there.
Mm-hmm.
Really stuck it to the man.
Right. So I feel like you've said a thing and it sounded quite intelligent.
Oh, no, I think it's true.
And then I've Googled puns... And I've just shattered it.
It's true on the larger scale, on the macro scale. If you take a whole set and the kind of things that are being discussed, it adds up to being important.
But by this definition, isn't every single thing political?
Every decision, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I said it's quite broad.
So the decision that we've taken to record this podcast, political.
Yeah, judging by the colour and sex and gender of previous
people. Me, what are you trying to
saying you're a screaming racist, Ollie.
Alex, how do you feel that you've come across in this show?
Mixed.
Mixed, explain.
I think at certain points, yeah, it's quite good. Hopefully some informative, interesting points. But at other times, who even knows what happened?
I think we all know.
Car crash.
I think I exposed you.
Yes.
That's what happened.
For my intellectual snobbery.
Mm-hmm.
And no doubt other things.
Mm. When can we expect you to come back to the comedy circuit and rescue the state of political comedy in Britain?
I don't know. Hopefully as soon as possible. But I had originally been planning to come back for September, but that's been put to the wayside by other projects.
Mm-hmm. What are those other projects?
Secret projects.
It's quite sinister.
It is.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Alex Chapman, thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Really?
Yes. Oh. They were donuts.
Thanks for listening to Series 2, Episode 7 of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast programme with my guest Alex Chapman. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please do go to the iTunes page or tell a friend, leave a review or a comment, that kind of thing to help out reach new peeps, yo. Or come along to one of our shows, why not? We're doing another Crown the Knave this Tuesday on the 28th of July. I'll be emceeing that. We've got a great roster. And a couple of weeks after that, on August the 11th, we'll be doing Crown the Knave, same place, Mughouse, under London Bridge, SE1 at 7:30. And that will be a preview of my Edinburgh show, Sunshine and Lollipops and a Creeping Sense of Existential Terror. So please do come along to some of those if they take your fancy. But for now, I will go. Bye. How is this happening?
He's now removing his pants. Oh, God.
Alex, you've gone on quite a strange... What are you doing?
I don't even know. I haven't had lunch. I'm quite hungry.
There's muffins.
There are. That's true. I've had a donut and a muffin. I don't know what time it is. I'm completely lost in time and space. My phone is dead. I have no watch. It could be next Tuesday. I don't know.
I've got you exactly where I want you.
I see. Should I be concerned?
Only if you don't like what I've got in store.
Is it another muffin?
It is, but it's not going where the other muffin went.
Oh dear.
It's going in your anus, is what I'm saying.
I feel like this is material that probably won't make it into the final cut.
Hmm.
Apart from that bit, which obviously will.
You overestimate me. I feel like you were trying to make a point earlier about my podcast, and it's
no, not really. Because as I say, I haven't actually looked through enough of them to come away with an informed opinion.
As someone at the forefront of liberal politics, and feel like even the hint or suggestion that I might not be the most perfect liberal person in the entire universe needs to be destroyed, and preferably a hashtag created out of it.
Yeah, I think people should send me a lot of vitriolic, hate-filled message on Twitter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mostly because
Hashtag leave Ollie alone.
Yeah. I've not had much going on my Twitter feed, so it'd be nice to kind of fill it out a bit, maybe pick up a few followers from the brouhaha.
Hashtag Ollie is white Jesus.
Yeah. That seems fine.
Just a few suggestions.